Versus Universe.
Good evening. Welcome to Paranexus Universe. Today is June 8th, 2011. My name's Doug Kelly. Good to have you. I'm here with Grant Rubendunst.
Hey, everybody. Welcome.
And
nice to have you with us.
Yeah, and tonight we're going to be interviewing two absolutely knowledgeable, amazing, out of this world.
Outstanding talk
yeah,
show.
No, guests. Yes.
Oh, that's
guests.
Right.
Yeah, and it's us.
Yeah.
We have guests, and they are us. They is us. So, but tonight we're going to be talking about something that's been on my mind for some time here, and it's basically survival of death theories and how they relate and if they can be reconciled. So we'll get more into that in just a moment. But if you've got comments or questions or feedback or points, then feel free to type those in the chat room. Jamie Havikin, our call screener, has been ill lately, so he will not be screening calls tonight. If you do call, which you can, I'll take the call. We won't be screening it, but I'll have my finger on the kill button.
Trigger, literally.
That's right.
You.
So
yeah, if we get any of those bad calls,
yeah.
So don't even try it out there.
Yeah, you know, just go do something useful with your time.
There you go.
Something productive. So we welcome those who are listening to the live program in the chat. I honestly do not know whether or not we are being simulcast on the Inception Radio Network or not. If we are, I am in the chat room, and so I'll try to follow questions. And if you are hearing me on the Inception Radio Network, then please say something in the chat room, and then I'll know. And then I'll know everything.
Absolutely.
All things will be known by the
All dark. Things shall be revealed.
Yeah.
You know, all of the clouds shall dissipate, you know, and we will be immaculate, boy, I'll tell you.
Well, we're already that.
Yeah, right.
Okay, so let's talk about this whole concept of survival of death theories. And let me just start going off with some of the theories. And I'm going to give you a quick overview of the theories, and then we'll get into them. The one of the theories is, of course, the survival hypothesis. And that simply means that a person's personality and consciousness survive the physical death of the body intact in a coherent fashion. This has been around. A lot of people actually believe that. Many religions believe that. But to take this a little bit further, well, before I even take it further, that's one. Okay, so we're going to assume that, yes, the consciousness survives the death of the physical body. This is in line with the first law of thermodynamics, also known as the law of conservation of energy, which states energy can be changed from one form to another, but it cannot be created or destroyed. Thus, the total amount of energy available in the universe is constant. So if that energy that is us dies, where does it go? Well, according to that law, it got to go somewhere. And so we're going to assume, for the purposes of discussion tonight, that it does survive the death of the physical body. So in a nutshell, before I get tearing into them, we have near-death experiences, which describe a certain process that that happens to people when they pass on. Related to that, of course, is shared death experiences, which is just supports the NDEs. Then we have some deathbed visions that happen to people. We also have the concept of reincarnation. Now, we also have, we've had the hypothesis of earthbound spirits that sometimes people don't know they're dead, or they've got a mission to fulfill or something to take care of before they, you know, go into the light, that sort of a thing. So how do these all work? That's kind of the question that I want to chat about in our discussion tonight. How do we reconcile these? And so let's start with near-death experiences. We had Dr. Raymond Moody on the program some months ago, to talk about near-death experiences based on his book Life After Life, and that he wrote back in 1975 and coined the term near-death experience. So according to that process, which has been, you know, talked about and experienced by hundreds, if not thousands, of individuals, likely thousands or millions of individuals, but we know of hundreds and hundreds of cases where people, once they pass, they have some common elements that happen. Not every one of these happens in every case, but as a group, all of these elements happen. They will have a life review, a panoramic life review, where they essentially go through all of their memories, all of their life experiences in a heartbeat, and almost relive them. Many of them are able to feel the pain, if you will, from people that they've hurt in their life. There's also the moving through a tunnel or walking down a path. There's also this light that has been variously described as Jesus or Buddha or Muhammad or whoever, or just in a light. There's experiences of loved ones who have passed on that are there to welcome them. And so you have this scenario that, hey, that's what happens when you die. You know, you get that life review, you walk down the path.
You know, the real fascinating thing about it is the fact, and I don't know if everybody is aware of it, is that these go back, the earliest documented case of a near-death experience was documented by Plato, and back in whatever that was, 54 BC. And I think that what's happened over the years is that being in the medical field, physicians, nurses, caretakers have always been with people that are on the edge of or close to dying. And it is not unusual for these people to be in, whether the body's having some sort of physiological change, where they feel that they're in the presence of a relative or somebody's there, there's somebody that's going to help them cross over. So it's a real, I think the best way to kind of sum it up is that it's something that is uniquely human. Uniquely human, but the thing that's really fascinating now is, and I've followed this for over 20 years, is that now they've always done more serious research, this is my opinion, over in Europe. But here in the United States, Dr. Samparni and others have been really working hard. And I think that if nothing else, what they're going to come up with is a redefinition of what constitutes physical death. Because it's going to have to go. The parameters are going to have to change.
How so?
Well, you know, clinical death is described as, you know, end of respiration. There's no heartbeat or anything else. And so some of the most interesting near-death experiences have occurred when people are, for all practical purposes, clinically dead. So if you are clinically dead at that point, how can you possibly, with your brain shutting down, okay, and say a minute or two after you die, or 2 or 3 minutes, some people used to think it was 5, your brain, you know, is still in the process of shutting down. But how do you explain people having, at that time, you would think that your brain would be just firing off in confusion rather than being organized. And a lot of these people come back from these near-death experiences and can describe instruments that doctors have been using on them, the room. They seem to have out-of-body experience, which also occurs with near-death experiences sometimes. But there are characteristics. Grayson and a few other physicians in Europe in the 1980s developed scales. And usually the deeper they call it a core event, the deeper you are in it, the more vivid the memories are. But the problem is, and you're probably right, and this is my opinion, that a lot of people have had the experience, but a lot of people won't talk about it either.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, because they don't want people to think they're crazy, and of course they don't know what's happened, or they're maybe not quite sure how to understand what's happened.
But, you know, I think the real interesting characteristic, you and I have talked about this many times, about the near-death experience, is the people who have the highest core experience and talk about it come back completely changed after that experience from the standpoint of their perception of what's important.
Mm-hmm.
And normally, most of the time, if they haven't been, they become more orientated towards being a loving person, being compassionate for those around them, not being caught up, being self-absorbed in what they need, but having some sort of empathy for the other person.
Yeah. And sometimes they even come back with more enhanced psychic ability too.
Yeah, and I think the interesting thing about that is that kind of dovetails with many philosophies. With many philosophies about, it's almost as if, especially that last characteristic, where let's say, for instance, you've been a person who is not, has been self-absorbed and not focused on you know, your fellow man. And when something like that happens and you come back with that experience, it's just, and it's been documented with more than one person, it's almost as if they've gone through that life review and they realize the important thing, because sometimes in those life reviews, they will see that they have fallen short. But the thing that I always like too, is there's the presence that they're in front of. Of course, there's always dark NDEs, but the presence before them is very forgiving, very loving.
Unconditional love.
Unconditional love. So that's very interesting, but it does kind of fit in there. So like, you've got to learn a lesson in this life.
Well, yeah, and that's, of course, a great hypothesis, too. I mean, we're here to learn, we're here to grow, and frankly, in my now held opinion, honestly, the next life is simply a chapter of a bigger book. So whatever that brings. And that's kind of what we're trying to reconcile here. So we've got these NDEs, which describes a process that happens to people when they die. Obviously, not everybody who is resuscitated has one or recalls one, perhaps, but so many do, and it describes them essentially moving down that pathway or through the tunnel or whatever toward the light and being received by past loved ones, you know, and they go on. They move on out. They're gone.
Yeah, and, well, you know, the interesting thing is, too, Doug, is that I believe it was in the 1990s or the late 1980s, the British were putting their fighter pilots in centrifuges, and they were really pushing a limit, you know, like they were pulling combat G turns, high Gs, like 8 Gs or whatever. And a lot of these guys described symptomology very close to the near-death experience, where they, you know, felt that they were going through a tunnel, and it was like when they're on the verge of blackout. But for every one of them that experienced that feeling or that whatever was going down, every one of them, to the last man, said it was very pleasant. So it's interesting. Do all the endorphins in your brain all fire off at once and everything else? And you're kind of like your own body's opiates kind of help you phase yourself out? Who knows? It's fascinating.
Yeah, it is. Okay, so we have the NDE experience. We have it backed up with the shared death experiences, where the alive and healthy loved ones of the person who's about to pass is there with them, and they all join in this several aspects of this life review and so on and so forth. So we have a lot of verification. That seems to be compelling. That's what happens when you die. You go on and you're received by loved ones, you move on, you're out of here. But then we have the other theory that seems to describe that some spirits are earthbound, that they remain earthbound for a variety of reasons. They don't know they're dead is one. Another one is they have unfinished business to take care of. And then, you know, then there's the idea that some spirits, when they die, they're gone. But we still have these earthbound. So that's the point of my discussion, my questions. I don't have the answer, but I wanted to discuss it. Maybe those in the chat room listening live might have some takes on it. But the idea is, how do we reconcile those two? Is it that the NDE experiences that we hear about never involve somebody remaining earthbound, so that we, in essence, have two scenarios, and the only ones we hear about with NDEs are those who had them? Obviously, you know, Grant, can you remember, have there been any NDEs where the person didn't experience the life review or the tunnel or the path or whatever? They were just kind of wandering around the hospital for a while and never really saw the light or anything?
The ones that have had that have normally been negative experiences that sometimes, in some cases, will turn around. But I also think, too, Doug, that one of the big things here is the person's individual belief system. And how that kind of fits into the puzzle. But yeah, there was a guy who I think now is an ordained minister, who was a avowed atheist. and was over in Europe, and he had suddenly had like an aneurysm or something, and he was rushed to the hospital, and you know, he, when he lost consciousness and he was very close to death, he felt that he was in a room in total darkness. Suicide victims have also said this too, with near-death
right.
experience, where they're in total darkness and oblivion, and then out of the oblivion, he felt like things were grabbing, and you know, very characteristic of, you know, like Christian mythology or some of the religious mythologies. And you know, he wasn't a religious person, but he, you know, started praying, and at that point in time, everything kind of turned around. But I don't think anything.
No atheist in the foxhole.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but I can't think of any. That you know, where they've been earthbound, and which has I'm always kind of been troubled. When you and I have, once again, have talked about this many times, I'm kind of troubled by earthbound spirits. You know, I just and maybe that just
I don't know. You know, we've been on some investigations. We've, you know, there have been cases that seems to be true. I mean, I can't prove it, of course, but I remember we were on that one case where. The husband was the alcoholic, and the place was a mess. And
yeah.
And you know, we had our psychic with us, and she was kind of channeling the entity who had built the house, and he was upset because they were keeping it in such bad shape. And in talking, and the client was not there when we did this, and in talking with this spirit, reasoning with him, he moved on, and they didn't have any more problems after that. So. You know, can I prove any of that? No, of course I can't. But, you know, there have been other things. Here's another example. Another psychic, Vicki Hunter, who was on the program a few weeks ago, she was just telling me this evening, late this afternoon, that there was a fellow that she'd lived in a house. She'd lived in it once, and then she'd moved away, and then she'd moved back to it. Well, she, when it became empty again, the fellow who lived there with his family, he'd committed suicide. He apparently was drinking, and anyway, he went and driving and killed himself. Anyway, so she's living there, and one night he shows up as kind of a shadow, and so she says, you know, hello, what are you doing? What are you doing here? You know, why are you in my room? Type of thing, like we would respond to any human. And he says, I'm looking for my family. And she told him that he had passed. He says, well, where's my family? So, and he showed up apparently three or four more times and then moved on. And in fact, he wanted her to find the family. She says, you can do that easier than me. I'm not going to do that. I don't do that. So, you know, there seems to be this theory. And I, again, don't know if it's true, but let's assume for a moment that it's got some merit. Which story is it? Is it the NDE version or is it the Earthbound version? Now, Chuck in the chat room makes a point. He says, not knowing you're dead, he says, that's assuming that the Earthbound spirit remembers the past life. I don't remember a chapter before this one. Why would I remember this life and the next chapter? That's a good point. And there does seem to be some evidence that people do remember at times. Like, for example, unfinished business would be one of those. I mean, I've heard too many accounts that seem to have credibility where a spirit hid something or, you know, like money or documents and needed to get those things to the living family and wouldn't leave until they did. So, you know, and then another, Tiger in the chat room, have you guys ever heard a spirit say, I didn't know I was dead?
No.
I haven't ever heard a spirit, to my knowledge, so
no,
I haven't either.
No, I think that's an easy theory to explain. I guess in my mind, I'm more inclined to like the stone tape theory, and maybe what you're seeing is a replay. You know, it's a residual sort of thing, you know, as opposed to some earthbound spirit. It just may be, to me, it's just like an old VCR that keeps playing over and over again. And I think that, you know, of course, the theory that goes with that is because something traumatic happened there. Or it was I mean, I think the same thing can be said for crisis apparitions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's almost as if, like, rather than it being earthbound, that spirit goes out to communicate the fact that they're no longer with us. So I guess for me personally, I just have some difficulty. And I remember the investigation that we went on, and it was interesting because, you know, it was an older property, and so the possibilities certainly existed. One time, if you recall too, Doug, when our psychics were telling us we had encountered an earthbound spirit, the one thing that stood out in my mind was they asked us, the earthbound spirit supposedly asked us if we were Haints. That one?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's another interesting hypothesis. I mean, I'm sure people have seen a couple of those movies have been out. The Others is one of them, where in essence we're the ghosts to them.
Right.
You know, fascinating hypothesis, you know.
Right. You know, not so far-fetched anymore in terms of when you start thinking about, and I know, you know, we've discussed this on the show, is string theory and multi-universes. And, I mean, look, in the Others, they talk about, well, we just overlapped. You know, you got to deal with them. They're a pain in the butt, but, you know, we're overlapping, you know. And, I mean, in membranes, well, membranes can sometimes get close to that, if not actually do it. Now, how long it lasts and... You know, what goes on, nobody knows.
Well, obviously, overlapping membranes would explain a lot if the realities are overlapping. Again, pure speculation. But mm-hmm. It would seem to explain some different things, like Bigfoot sightings and Loch Ness Monster sightings. So, you know, and it could, obviously, if it was true, it would explain perhaps some ghost sightings, too, some apparitions or...
Yeah, and the physics, and we got to remember, too, that, I mean, a lot of the cosmologists are saying stuff like, well, you know, what physics apply in one membrane may not apply in the other one.
Mm-hmm.
So that you've got two completely different universes with different laws of physics, just as thin as your breath away from you, you know?
Yeah. So what we're talking about for those who have joined us recently is how do we reconcile some of these different versions of what happens to us when we die. I mean, we have the version that says some spirits can remain earthbound, some just go on to the light. Then we have the near-death experience scenario where the individual has the line of review, goes down the path or through the tunnel or some variation of that to the light, is welcomed by dead loved ones, and they just go on to the whatever's next.
Yeah.
And so, you know, which way is it? What exactly is it like in the next chapter, the next life?
And by all means, you know, give us some feedback. You know, if you've had a near-death experience, call in. Mm-hmm. Talk to us about it. If you, you know, have encountered what you believe is an earthbound spirit, call in or tell us about it in the chat room.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, because we're interested, you know. We want you as part of this exchange. So by all means, you know, let us know.
Yeah, we're just speculating. We're just talking, discussing, and you never know. Maybe something will come out of it. There's also another aspect, and that's, of course, reincarnation. And, you know, admittedly, we're really dealing more on the metaphysical aspect of paranormal research in this show. And so you take reincarnation. I'm actually going to talk about that on my Sunday evening show this week. And so I'm not going to go deeply into it. But, you know, the whole thing of reincarnation, well, if we're reincarnated, how does that fit into the whole earthbound NDE mix, you know?
Well, I think the interesting thing about reincarnation is it's like the cycle, the wheel. You know, we're on the wheel and, you know, you're working your way up. It's so that what's going on is it's ever changing because you don't know what's going to happen in your next incarnation. But, you know, there's a couple of cases with reincarnation, and the one that really stands out in my mind is one about a young kid. I think he was out in California, and as like he's under 5 years old now, and he started drawing pictures about airplanes that he never should have known about, and talked about dying in an airplane crash, and he identified he was on an aircraft carrier. I mean, this was really some very interesting stuff, and he even named, this kid did, people, names of people that he knew. Now, it wasn't their complete name, but it'd be like their last name or something else. Well, his parents got really interested in it, and they started doing research and come to find out there was a person of that name. Two of his people were also fellow pilots were killed on the same day or something along those lines. And then what was even more interesting was as the child grew older, he forgot all those memories. He doesn't remember any of them anymore.
Well, and that's one of the things that I have really reviewed this reincarnation concept. And, and I do not necessarily believe in it, but I am open to it. So that's my position at this point. My explanation for that kind of goes back to the psychic realm. For example, how do you explain psychic phenomena? How do you explain that some people are dialed in to what amounts to be a universal consciousness or an Akashic record? There seems to be some compelling evidence for something like that, where they can dial in, they would know things, they can see probabilities and for future stuff. They can know this stuff. And then we take children, and especially psychically gifted children, but children at large, who tend to have more psychic ability at that young age. Could it be that this young boy was dialed into the Akashic record and getting information? It just happened to, you know, that's what he dialed into. That could explain it, you know, other than reincarnation.
Well, you know, too, there's been some really interesting cases. There's a professor out of the University of Virginia that was like one of the foremost guys in researching reincarnation. His name escapes me now. But some of the most interesting ones, of course, were in the East, you know, in India. And one of them was a case where a guy had been murdered, and in a village that was miles away from where this kid was born. He was born in the village, and of course, once again, this is the way the story came down, and we can't, you know, I can't address any of the variables that might have occurred. But nonetheless, the interesting thing about the story was this young boy started telling his parents at a really early age that he lived in a village down the road before and he had been shot. Mm-hmm. And in the spot where he had been shot, he had a birthmark.
Mm-hmm.
And this birthmark was circular like a bullet. And when they all did the whole thing, they went back to his family, identified members of this family. Somehow they all linked it together. And it was just a real interesting case so that this kid had all this information. Now, I think there's a dovetail there with earthbound spirit, because let's assume that those people had a very untimely death, like the pilot and this person in India, and maybe they did have things that were unresolved, and for whatever reason, through whether they were reincarnated or whether they could communicate with children at a young age because of their psychic abilities, somehow resolve that.
This case that you're talking about was actually written about in a paper in 1992 by the late Dr. Ian Stevenson.
Yes, that's who it is, out of the University of Virginia, I think, right?
I don't have that information, but he the name of the paper was Birthmarks and Birth Defects Corresponding to Wounds on Deceased Persons.
Yeah.
And I've actually written about this in my one of my metaphysical courses on death and dying and quantum entanglement and physics and all that. And I've gone through this, and I actually got pictures here I'm looking at. Of
so was I halfway birthmarks. Close?
You were pretty much, you know, on. And there was also some back pain that he had reported.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, but what maybe you didn't hear was that he'd also injured his back in a skydiving, apparently. Let's see, is that a different one? I think he hurt his back in a skydiving accident earlier. But the point is that it takes a lot to go from one to the other. And, of course, I'm trying to remain as grounded and objective here as I can within the limits that we can remain grounded and objective with this topic. So, so the point is that we've got some different scenarios as to what happens to us when we die. And if you are an investigator, a researcher, or a psychic and have an opinion on it, feel free to type in the chat room or give us a call on the number there on your screen. And
yeah, tell us about
an NDE.
Your experiences. Yeah.
If you have an NDE, anything like that, or what your thoughts
on
it.
Yeah, and don't be shy, because, you know, we're just sitting here drinking coffee or iced tea or whatever, you know.
Diet Coke.
Yeah, I got the iced tea. You know, I've been indoctrinated. Been down here, down south for too long.
Yeah.
Just put that tea out in the sun, and there you go. Add a little lemon, you're ready to go.
So I don't know how much more we can get into this. And tonight we had an opening. We didn't have a guest schedule, so we had an opening, and we're going to talk about this for a little bit more. We may end up ending the show early if we don't get any comments, but. You know, that's some fascinating stuff. You know, and I am fascinated, and I'm one of those people that just says, you know, I think we can find some answers. It may be tough, and it is tough for sure, but I think that we can begin to correlate some different things. It's just like near-death experiences, and especially shared death experiences. I mean, that sent me over the edge in terms of believing in the afterlife. I was not ever quite sure, but you know what? That did it for me. We just have too much compelling evidence.
What was it that pushed you over the edge?
Shared death experiences.
Oh,
but of course, those are based on near-death experiences. When the alive and healthy loved ones of the dying person are there, and they share in that near-death experience.
Well, you know, the other thing, too, is that with near-death experiences, there's actually been groups of people, and I think in one case it was a group of firefighters that were, I think it happened in California, where they were surrounded, they were trapped by a fire, they had all pretty much, you know, I don't know at what various stages they might have been at death, but they had a shared experience.
Yeah.
Which was really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And that's what just proved it to me for all intents and purposes. There is a statement in the chat, if people are being reincarnated, who are all these ghosts? And that's a good question.
That is a good point.
Well, and it leads to another good question that I had considered in my review in my course on reincarnation. There's a number of issues that I have with it. I'm not going to go into all of them, but there is one, you know, accounting for all the souls. And here's just some quick specs or some statistics. The world population back in the year 1800 was about 1 billion. It's currently close to 7 billion. It's estimated by the United Nations to peak at just under 10 billion by the year 2075. So my question is, you know, what were the extra 6 billion souls that we now have doing in 1800? You know, is there a waiting list to reincarnate? Where will the additional 3 billion souls come from in 2075?
Well, you know, I really think that's really a good question. But I also think that you have to look at it from the religious standpoint there. And then when you look at it from that standpoint, because not everybody is reincarnated according to certain Eastern religions, you know. They may be reincarnated, but they may not be reincarnated as a human. Still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Yeah, they may not be reincarnated as a human. It depends. You know, I mean, there's some Eastern religions that feel that, you know what, excuse me, if you are a despicable person, well, you're going to come back as something that's lower on the evolutionary scale so that you're going to have to work your way back up.
You were a cop.
Come back a beetle, you know. I always thought maybe the mass murderers come back as mosquitoes, you know, to be slotted over and over and over again. But, you know, it's just one of those things where when it gets to that point, you almost have to look at it or at least take that into consideration. Now, what you're saying is, yeah, where are they all coming from? And maybe the thing is that they're not. Maybe that's some move on and some don't.
Well,
but, you know, it's kind of like the universe recycling.
Maybe there's a pool, and of course, is it in Buddhism or Hinduism or both, where you basically go back. You know, it's like a drop of water going back to the ocean of universal consciousness. So,
right.
You know, there's never any want for all those. But
right, you're joined with a Godhead.
Yeah.
You should be eventually working your way up, the more enlightened. Yeah,
right, right, as if that's something I would want to do.
So here's the bad part about that. You got to work hard in this life, and then the next life you got to work just as hard.
Well,
to get to the pinnacle, I suppose.
If reincarnation's true, then I'll be damned if I'm coming back. But you never know. And see, that's another problem I have with the whole concept is that, you know what, if I have knowledge of previous lives, how much better could I do in this one? I've already learned those lessons. I need memory. I need to remember those things so I can do better. That would apply to anybody.
Well, I guess if you wanted to get psychological, Jung talked about it, you know, and you have all this collective unconscious. And maybe this is just, I'm just absolutely speculating, going on. Maybe they do exist within us, and maybe we can't recognize them for what they are, but maybe they're our drives.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our drives to be successful because somebody in a former life or one of our ancestors wasn't, or so that ancestor always wanted to do something that you have a passion for. I mean, who knows? Who knows? I mean, we all like to think we're absolutely unique, but I mean, the human mind is incredibly interesting, fascinating, and sometimes we're mystical.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
You know, we cannot disregard the mystical in that, and I think that maybe that once again is uniquely human.
Well, we are unique. Hey, you're unique, just like the rest of us.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's interesting.
Get in the queue.
So maybe that's the deal where you can choose to come back. You know, you got the free will still, and some people do for whatever reason. That's cool. That's fine. Whatever. I at this point in my learning, I have to regard reincarnation as more of a faith-based thing than anything else. But, you know, I'm always open to this. I'm always looking for compelling evidence and looking to learn. So I remain open to this and other things. Now, we're talking about reconciling some of these different theories of what happens to us when we die, whether we're reincarnated, whether we go down that tunnel or pathway, as the near-death experiences suggest, or whether some spirits can remain earthbound due to unfinished business or the fact they don't, quote, know they're dead. In other words, they wake up and they just don't realize it. That's been the basis of a couple of those movies, like The Others. And there's another one. I can't remember the name. Maybe somebody remembers it. It's with Anne Hathaway. She was in it. Plane crash and so forth. Maybe you remember the name. I can't remember it. But do these things happen? Well, there seems to be some evidence and some compelling evidence that a spirit can be earthbound. Look at Hans Holzer. I mean, he was a prolific writer, and he had all these books, and I've read several of them, and he always used a trance medium. And a lot of times that's what they did. The spirit was hanging around for some odd reason. And that's another thing, when people have these genuine haunting events, and of course most of them are not, but when they have a genuine haunting event, a lot of times the spirit picks up on whatever psychic ability they have, so they're drawn to them, and they want something. They want help. They want them to contact somebody. And that seems to be a fairly widespread case or scenario.
Well, you know, when we've done our table tippings and, we've worked with psychics, you know, it always seems like if something's coming in, you don't know who you're going to get. You know, I mean, it just seems to me that once you're in that realm, why would you want to come back here? Why would you even want to come back? Now, I understand all the theories about a person's confused, they're afraid they're going to go to heaven or hell, all that kind of stuff, but and I think that some of the spiritualists believe that, you know, they just kind of come and go. They can touch base with either one, but, you know, and you have guides. Well, who are your guides?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's another good question of how this all fits into place.
Yeah. You know, who designated them to be your guide? You know, are they an ancient, distant ancestor, if you believe in reincarnation, or, you know, if you want to, like, take that concept into consideration? Or are they part of your collective unconscious that actually could be genetic? You know, they just cannot...
higher self, whatever.
Right. They can't communicate that. So, I mean, if nothing else, once again, maybe this whole phenomena is all about human, all about what constitutes humans, how they perceive the universe, how they can project their feelings onto the universe.
Well, speaking of guides... You know, I might just take the opportunity here to relate an experience I had with a guide. And incidentally, I don't call my guide a guide because, you know, I don't need anybody to guide me. But I don't mind asking for advice, and I welcome advice. So I call him my spirit advisor rather than a guide. But this is an interesting story, and... If you've been listening to these shows, and if you know me at all, you know that I'm not going to just accept it on faith. That ain't going to happen. I've got to have some compelling evidence, some compelling basis, which has probably limited and blocked my own psychic development, but it's kind of the way it's been. And so several years ago, Gregory Kent, Paranexus board member and psychic medium, spiritualist pastor, was here. We were working on some psychic development, and I just asked him, you know, is there anybody here around me? And he says, yeah, I see a monk. I said, a monk? I mean, knowing me, you know, religious, ain't a monk? And Gregory basically says, he's your guide. I'm laughing my butt off thinking, oh, great, what is this, some cosmic joke, you know, that I have a monk for a guide? Well, he's in his Franciscan robe, brown robe, and so forth. And I said, what's his name? And Gregory couldn't pick up on it, but instantly this name Stanley popped in my head. And I'm thinking, where did that come from? And wow, a monk named Stanley? Not that I, you know, have any problem with Stanley as a name, but it just didn't fit. But I didn't have anything else to call him, so I just used that. Didn't think a whole lot more about it. And then a few months later, I think you were with us, Grant, on this investigation.
Well, you know, if I could add something, yeah. I remember at the time you were kind of taken back, you know, because it was just like, say what?
Mm-hmm.
And but continue, because it's an very interesting story.
It is an interesting, and it has led me to believe that I do have a spirit advisor. But you'll hear why, and I don't do this easily. Okay, so a few months later, we're on an investigation up above Tampa. There's apparently this entity, a human spirit, who's, I don't know, bothering one of the boys who was autistic. And so we were there. I don't know how many. I can't remember if you were there or not, Grant, but there were six or eight of us in a circle.
I don't think I was there.
I don't think you were either. There were six or eight of us in a circle. We were joining hands, basically trying to create an energy thing to get rid of him, including the client. So if nothing else, even if it was all bogus, if nothing else, the client would buy into it, manage their belief system, and it would help. So we were doing this. And Lori, one of our teammates, a psychic and a very good one, was there. And she was inviting deceased loved ones to come in and join and to help us get rid of this spirit dude. And so she's going around naming who's coming for who. And I said, is there anybody here for me, Lori? And she says, there is, but I'm not getting a name. She continued around the circle. And when she was done, I says, are you picking up on any names of this person? She says, you know, I'm getting something with an S, like Stephen or Stanley or something like that. And it blew me away because I kind of, you know, this monk spirit guide was not exactly in the forefront of my mind. And it blew me away. All right, fair enough. So since that time, we've done a number of table tippings and with Gregory. And a lot of times the table kind of start to die, and Gregory will say, you know, Doug, can you ask Stanley to step in? And I do, and that table always moves. It's just amazing. So I'm picking up all these things, but I'm still not a true believer at this point. Well, fast forward to about a month ago.
Yeah, folks, because all this went down about 2 or 3 years
ago. Yeah, about probably 3 years ago. So fast forward to about a month ago, and I meet a new person. She became a student in my metaphysics school, and she's been on this program, and she's in the chat room right now, Vicki Hunter. And she is a psychic, even though she may not like that word. Forgive me. But she connects. And so on about the first day or second time I talked to her on Skype, video Skype, we're talking away, and she's kind of, I don't know what the conversation, but I asked her, do you see anybody in the room with me? And I actually had my dad on my mind. And she says, well, I see a monk. And she had no knowledge of any of this. I haven't really talked about it before. She had no knowledge.
Yeah, none of this has been published anywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
It's just, so she says there's a monk, and I it just floored me. A monk, and she's in a brown robe and all that. And I said, well, are you getting a name? And she says, she pauses for a moment. She says, I'm getting Thomas Francis. Obviously, it wasn't Stanley. I would have really fell off my chair if she'd said Stanley. So she said Thomas Francis. And I'm thinking, okay, well, that does sound more like a monk's name. And she basically tells me he's here, you know, he's my guide, and on and on. And so we're talking about the school and about this metaphysical church I have and some different things, and this word pops into my head, and the word is metaphology. And I'm thinking, wow, that's a good name, but where'd that come from? And I didn't even think about it again. And a couple of minutes later, the word pops back in my head. Just very unusual for me, because I'd never heard the word to my knowledge. So I told her about it. We look it up. It's not a word. But it sounds so cool, I had to define it, and which I've done. And basically, it's the counterpart for theology when you're talking with metaphysics. So I'm thinking, where did this word come from? And I asked her, I said, you know, did Thomas put that in my head? And she says, yeah, he did. But, you know, again, I'm not really buying into this too much at this point, but it was amazing. She picked up on a monk of all things. So that night, I work all through the evening, all through the night is my usual custom. And I hit the bed, I don't know, must have been around 4 o'clock in the morning. And my wife Tracy's asleep, and so I'm there laying, you know, starting to go to sleep, but not really. I'm thinking about these events that... And, you know, that it happened, and the monk and Thomas Francis and this word metaphology popping into my head. And I'm thinking about it. I'm not talking out loud because Tracy's sleeping. I'm thinking, and I'm thinking, wow, Thomas, did you put that word in my head? And I swear to you, not a half a second later, Tracy does this. She goes, yep. And she rarely talks in her sleep. Rarely. And I couldn't believe that. I'm thinking, oh, my God. In fact, I didn't even almost get it at first. I thought, oh, she's talking to her sleep. I kind of chuckled. And then it hit me. Wow. Yeah, of all the words she could say at that very instant, and it was that one, you know, confirming what I had just asked in my mind, it blew me away. I couldn't believe it. I'm thinking, wow, this. What do I even make of this? So I was telling Tracy about this the next day and telling her that, you know, guide's name's not Stanley, according to Vicky, but Thomas Francis. She says, let's look up the name. And one thing I have to tell you before I tell you what the names mean is that Vicky was telling me that Thomas was saying to her that he and I were connected. And I'm thinking, well, does that mean he's a part of me, my higher self or something like that? And she says, no, he's close to you. Been close to you, very close to you. So now I'm telling Tracy about the names. She's looking them up on her iPhone, the meaning of them. She looks up Thomas, and then she looks, after she finds it, she looks at me with wide eyes. She says, Thomas means twin. I said, really? And then she looks up Francis, which means free. So twin free, wow, what a coincidence. You know, and so...
Well, you see, centuries ago, when you're laboring away in your former life as a scribe in one of those seminaries or monasteries,
yeah.
you know, your name was Thomas Francis Stanley.
Yeah. So all these little coincidences begin to pile up on one up on top of another. And so I'm talking to Vicky every day or a couple of days, and we're discussing some of these different things. And then I get a call from... one of my church members, and we're chatting on the phone, really nice guy. In fact, he was on my program last week, on my church program. And he talks about how he wanted to be a monk, of all things, when he was younger, and now he's into the metaphysical world. And then that day, when Vicky had told me that the guide's name was Thomas Francis, I get a call about my school from some fella, and I say, hi, this is Doug. And the guy says, hi, my name's Thomas, and I had some questions about, you know, I'm thinking, oh, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah, just a ton of synchronicity there.
Yeah, just all these little things coming up and piling one on the other. And so at this point, I apparently have a spirit advisor named Thomas Francis Stanley. I just give him all three names. And he's apparently a twin, so close that he's a twin. And
but what you didn't tell the folks is he was burned at the stake for heresy.
he
got tired of writing, you know.
Grant's just joking. I don't know that.
Yeah, just kidding.
So that's a story I haven't told before. It took a lot for me to even start thinking it could have some truth to it. And I can't believe that instance where my wife, Tracy, talked in her sleep to answer my questions.
Well, you know, Doug, I worked with a psychologist. I have told you this story before. I worked with a guy who had been a psychologist for many, many years. And when I knew this gentleman, he's still alive. He was, gosh, in his 70s or his 80s. And I was having a debate with somebody in my office one time when I worked for the state about The guy had come into my office. He was a rather uptight guy. He was a manager. Of course, I think that's one of the requirements. But he came in and he said, you know, I had this very vivid dream about my father last night and yada, yada, yada. And I said to him at the time, I said, well, you know, some people think that, you know, your deceased relatives or family members can communicate with you during the state of sleep because it's an altered state of consciousness. And so he kind of was like, he kind of looked at me, his eyes got wide and his mouth kind of opened. I was like, what? And it just so happened at that time that psychologist was walking past my office and he just like kind of spontaneously said to the doctor, he said, doctor, come in here for a minute, would you? And I think he was trying to, you know, make me look foolish. And he said to the doctor, he said, you know, this is what Grant thinks, you know, about that people, that the deceased might come back to you in your dreams. And much to my surprise, because I thought I was going to get a lambasting now from, you know,
right,
by two people. He said, oh, yeah, I think that people, deceased people, can communicate with us during that dream state. And I thought my old boss was going to fall off his chair. But, you know, I mean, he just said, you know, what he was, I think what he was alluding to was, you know, that that was a cultural belief as well with him, because he'd been raised in the South. His father was a minister and everything else. But also, I think he was acknowledging the mystical and the fact that, you know, we don't know everything.
Yeah.
And I think that, that's part of the, that's got to be part of the whole equation for the individual. You have to look at it that way, you know.
You do. And there's just too many of these synchronistic events that happen with people. And it's like Bigfoot sightings. We have so many of them, so many credible witnesses. Same with UFO sightings.
But, you know, if we can just digress for a minute, Doug,
yeah,
you know, I often wonder about synchronicity in the sense that, you know, the thing about quantum mechanics where if you, you know, if you observe something, you cause it to change. And I've often wondered with synchronicity, because I have experienced it myself, and just recently, as I told you, I just wonder if it's one of those things where you're projecting your energy into the universe, and by doing so, you cause the universe to change towards
right.
your inclination. You know what I'm saying? Does it make any sense?
Well,
what I'm saying?
You're
like
talking
almost,
about a psychic projection in the same
by observing or by, you know, taking one synchronous one event that it could, because the way you perceive the universe or you're observing the universe, it could stimulate a chain of synchronistic events to occur. Does
well,
that make any sense?
Yeah, it does. Actually, that's in line with quantum mechanics, because one of the things in quantum theory is that you have quantum entanglement and you have the Heisenberg uncertainty principle. And basically, quantum entanglement means when one particle is entangled with another one, when that one particle changes, the other one responds in like manner instantly, not at the speed of light, faster, instantly, with no known means of communication.
Yeah, Einstein
calls so,
physics.
Yeah, it's, yes, what is he, now I've just forgotten it. It's, I've forgotten the phrase that he used. But anyway, so then we've got the uncertainty principle that basically says reality does not occur until consciousness enters the picture. And they call it superposition.
Right.
And so basically it's like all possibilities are sitting there waiting. And then when we observe it, it collapses into reality.
Right.
So in essence,
triggers the event.
Yeah, so it's like we create a reality. Now it's not, obviously we can't just think of something and have that reality, or there'd be a lot of lottery winners. But
then, you know, the thing that I find so beautiful about this is there's a symmetry to this, and it comes back again to the mystical ways that humans, because the philosophy and the mystic are just in this dance, you know, this
mm-hmm.
embrace, and
mm-hmm.
you know what? Because if you take a step to the right, you're in the mystical. If you take a step to the left, you're back into quantum physics.
Right.
And each chain of event, you know, if by observing it, it's going to send off a whole chain of events, each one different.
Mm-hmm.
With every possibility, endless possibilities.
Well, that's the and that's the point.
At least
point,
that's one of the theories.
And that's the point about psychic predictions. Psychic predictions are not necessarily reality. Psychics predict probabilities based on the here and the now. But since we have free will, we can change our future by simply changing our thinking, changing our attitude, and doing things differently. So all of this comes in, into being, you know, we're talking about reconciling what happens to us after death.
Transpersonal anthropology and transpersonal psychology.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we are more than just our physical makeup.
And, you know, if you folks aren't familiar with those terms, look them up because you're going to find how closely akin they are to what Doug and I have been doing for the last couple of years and what you may be engaged in now.
Many years.
Yeah, and that folks just don't recognize that there is a science behind it.
There is, and if you'd like to learn more about that, there's a couple of things you can do. Obviously, join us at Paranexus, paranexus.org. If you haven't been there, we welcome you and encourage you to join. Paranexus is a 501c3 nonprofit, and memberships are one of the ways that we stay going. So we'd love to have you. We're looking for like-minded people to, you know, jump in, and we sharpen each other. If and I'll do a very unusual plug for my school too. If you're interested in learning more about metaphysics, including all the things we've just talked about and a lot more, then I invite you to visit my school at metaphysicsinstitute.org, and you can learn more about getting a degree in metaphysics, and that includes paranormal science, ufology, parapsychology, those things. It's been around for a little over a year now, and got some great students.
And metaphysics was the science for centuries.
Mm-hmm. It was
done by the Greeks. It was Socrates, was it not?
Yeah, Aristotle.
Aristotle, that's right, I'm sorry.
So, anyway, we've had an interesting discussion tonight. We appreciate those who have joined us in the chat room for the live broadcast. We appreciate those who are listening to the archives. And by the way, I was checking the stats before the show, and so to date we have over 175,000 archive listens to
wow.
the show. So
well, that's great. Well, we do appreciate that. You know, we wish we heard more from folks as to what we could do, or, you know, if you have interesting topics or if you want to be a guest, by all means, call us. You know, we would love to hear from you or email us, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
and always thanks for joining us and thanks for listening.
Now, next week, we have a special guest, Dr. Andrew Nichols. He's a parapsychologist here in Florida and fairly well known. And actually, I've been wanting to get him on the show for quite
a while. Oh, yeah, time, Dr. So. Nichols. He's over off the East Coast, isn't
no,
he?
No, he's in Gainesville. So I think
terrific. Great.
Yeah, so I'm really looking forward to having Dr. Nichols here.
Yeah, well, that'll be
and
terrific.
We'll be talking about parapsychology and related things. So, anyway, folks, that's all we've got. For tonight, again, thank you for your support. We really appreciate it. We hope you have a great week. See you next week.
Yeah, have a great weekend, folks. Take care.
Good night.